listening to Creative and Curious, a weekly podcast made for creative seekers who are compelled to let your inner artist reign free. Here we explore the mystery of how creating makes us better humans and artists. I'm Marika, and welcome to today's discoveries. Welcome to episode 2 of Creative and Curious. I am so excited to talk to you about a subject that I find really interesting and stimulating, which is where to find sources of inspiration to guide your work. And to begin, I want to start with a quote from Frida Kahlo, which I think sums up this episode's intent nicely. She says, "I am my own muse. I am the subject I know best. The subject I want to better." What I really love about Frida Kahlo and her paintings is that they are self-portraits, but they're not just a photograph. Maybe one of the paintings for me that I can relate to and that I think really expresses the inner state of her life, she depicted her spine as a column, and it was a broken column inside, which really reflected, like I talked about in the last episode, how she was in chronic pain all the time. It was such a wonderful painting that showed and symbolized what was happening inside of her body, not just what she looked like on the outside. In that way, it expressed both her emotional and her spiritual state as somebody in chronic pain. In this way, she's moving towards more of a depiction of what the human experience is about. Not just physically, not just how we express it with our physical senses, that there's more. There's this sort of emotional energy. There's this emotional way of knowing about the world. It really can't be transmitted very well. I mean, we can use words, we can use painting, we can use music, and all these things sort of brush up against what reality really is. But you can't actually like plug into me like a USB drive or something, and I can just show you emotionally exactly what's going on with me and thoughts and what it's like for Marika to be Marika, which would kind of be crazy. But I do think it's really interesting to try to push into what it means to express yourself beyond the photograph, beyond the visual space, or whether it's music or writing or acting, it's like really pushing into inviting people into your inner life. And Frida Kahlo does that. And she understood that she was the best inspiration for her. So photographs are perfectly wonderful ways to learn how to paint. And especially if you have a very fine technical ability, you can create beautiful and sublime realistic or even stylized or impressionistic paintings or musical renditions or whatever it is, whatever your medium is, from those spaces. I've had wonderful, wonderful painters say to me that they don't feel like they're very creative because they don't push into the abstract, which I think is really interesting because I think an abstract painter really sits in these emotional spaces and really trying to tug on emotions. But at the same time, there's always this insecurity of being an abstract painter, wondering, why don't I move into that realistic space? Can I move in? Do I even have the ability or the talent? There's always insecurity in everything. And maybe I do, maybe I don't, right? I do find it really interesting to look at different places for inspiration than just the physical world. And in a lot of ways, like Frida Kahlo, she combined it, right? She combined the portrait with these ideas to try to express her pain or her experiences internally. What I'm going to do is give you a list of about 8 different places that you can find sources of inspiration that are not a photograph, essentially. Combine that with these ideas, and maybe your art will become more interesting, and maybe you'll find creating your art more interesting because of it. So the first one that I'm going to talk about is memory. Why do I think memory is an interesting place to start from? Well, in your memory, for sure, you have images or snippets of music or thoughts or ideas or stories that are definitely warped by time. And it's kind of that warping of time that makes them more interesting, because part of that warping is the filter of your own personal growth on an experience that you had. And that can really frame what you remember about an experience. It can be really, really inaccurate too, by the way. Like, you can be really far off on your memory, but your memory is also trying to tell you something, I think. I think it's best to sort of trust yourself than to not trust yourself. So even if your memory is completely wildly inaccurate, there's something of the mood, or there's something of the feeling that's embedded in that memory, especially if there's sort of a visual or an icon associated with that. To give some examples, I early on painted a painting of a goldfish. It was a very intuitive style painting. I didn't really know what I was going to paint when I was painting it, and watched this sort of goldfish unfold. And I realized it was a strange subject at the time. I was, you know, in grad school. I had either married or close to being married, very young, very adventurous, lots of travel, not a lot of interest in goldfish. Goldfish really not a thing for me. It was interesting to watch this goldfish unfold and kind of realize that one of the things that I was doing was I was really meditating on this experience that I had as a child. My dad and I would walk to the Rose Garden in Seattle, where there was a goldfish pond. Those goldfish, when I was young, like six, when I was 6 years old, they were kind of magical, the way that they kind of rose up through the water and looked at you and took a gulp of air and then went back down. I mean, yes, by the time I was 28, 29, not so into the goldfish, but that six-year-old me thought they were absolutely fascinating. It was really fun to invite that memory back in through my art. It was a wonderful way of me reconnecting with my father, who passed away when I was 23, without really realizing that I was reconnecting with him by painting this goldfish. It was afterwards that I realized that it was, in fact, a kind of portrait of our relationship, and it was a painting in memory of him. Memory can be that intense. Just a goldfish can trigger not just the beauty of that moment and how magical they were, but also what a wonderful relationship I had with my dad when I was growing up, and these wonderful walks that he would always take me on to this rose garden. So that's one reason why memory can be an interesting subject. I recently went to Scotland, and about 3 months ago, we went to the Isle of Skye and the Isle of Mull and Staffa. Dramatic landscapes, super green, skies that went on forever. It was a very relaxing trip for me. My kids did not come with me. I just went with my mom. And so in a lot of ways, I could be much more contemplative than I am on a regular trip with my whole family. But this one was, in a lot of ways, just calm and an inviting space. And Scotland was so magical. The landscape was so magical. And I did end up painting quite a few landscapes, abstract landscapes from that. Though I had a picture or a photograph in mind when I painted them, there was a point in the painting process. Either I never looked at a photograph, I just used my memory, or there was a point where I decided I don't want the photograph. I'm just going to use my memory. Because what I really wanted to do was infuse the painting, not with realism, but with the mood that I was feeling when I would see these beautiful landscapes. I think I did it best in a painting that I just ended up calling Isle. When you kind of let go of a photograph, when you let go of trying to match colors all the time, sometimes more interesting and strangely accurate colors come into your paintings. And so I have turquoise in the sky and a phthalo blue and some green gold in the sky. And it's really wonderful because it kind of captured these moments where there'd be holes in the clouds and lights sort of filtering through them, and sort of the storminess of fall sky in Scotland, the water crashing on the isle is very stylized, but in the same way, full of motion. Again, if I was trying to absolutely capture what I saw in the photograph, I probably would have missed some of the opportunity to just kind of riff on it a little bit, honestly, and see where it goes and see where it takes you emotionally. I think it's worth it. I think it's worth kind of playing around with, put the photograph away. Yes, you might have something in your head. Just invite and trust what you remember of the photograph as you're painting, or what you remember of the story as you're painting or as you're writing or whatever your creative process is. Just trusting the memory and allowing it to reform. Because again, that's more about your inner landscape, right? That's more about who you are and how you're responding to those events. Either the events from childhood or, you know, events from places like if you have an equivalent Scotland in your life. Some other places that I've been known to draw my inspiration from are strange. Injury. Frida Kahlo definitely does this. She's painting her injury. She's painting her pain. I did the same thing. There's something about painting. There's something about creating that's also very healing. And so when I've had some traumatic injuries in my life, I've turned to painting to express that feeling of the pain. And in some ways to get to know myself better, to kind of get inside of that pain and meditate around it, maybe help it heal. So a couple examples, way back again, early painting career, 2003, 2004, I felt like carpal tunnel syndrome. I had some kind of nerve stuff radiating from my elbow into my wrist, and it was really getting hard to write and use a pen and even paint. It's kind of interesting that I was painting, because I know it was painting. It was feeling weird when I created this painting. I created a painting called Carpal Tunnel. The painting is of a hand. The hand looks yellow and red and looks kind of skeletal and uncomfortable. And it's reaching out into a pool of stylized water, something soothing. Ended up calling it Carpal Tunnel. I don't know how I healed from that one. I just know that eventually it went away. More recently, about 5 years ago, I hurt my back really bad. I was in the ER twice and I was in bed for 2 weeks. I couldn't walk. I was in a lot of pain. I was in traumatic pain, and I was in the kind of pain that you're afraid of the pain kind of pain. And I was on a lot of drugs trying to get over it. Part of my healing process was I had this absolutely stunning MRI that showed that I had herniated my disc pretty dramatically on both sides. MRIs are awesome, by the way. They're really great inspiration. If you have an MRI of anything, that is fantastic inspiration. They are so awesome. I have a MRI also of my son's brain because he's dyslexic, and it is just the most wild thing to be able to see somebody's brain from different angles, and your spine too. Like, your spine's pretty absolutely amazingly important to your whole freaking life, right? So yeah, I took that MRI and I painted the whole spine all the way down like a rainbow. And then, of course, where the disc was herniated, it's just all this red nonsense. It's just crazy pain. I also was commissioned to paint somebody's heart. She had had multiple minor heart surgeries and had finally had her last surgery. She wanted to commemorate the fact that she was past that part of her life. And in that painting, I used multiple sources in that case for that heart. Including an EKG and the device that they implanted. Sources of injury and pain, physical pain, can be really interesting places to look for inspiration. Not that I'm telling you to go get hurt and then paint about it, but you could go back in time and think about an injury, or if you do get injured, you could think about using painting or your creative energy to heal yourself, to explore that pain. Which takes me to the next one. The next one is painting about healing. in some ways, this is kind of a divination, right? Like this is like magic making. When I was going through that process of healing for my back, I also not only created paintings of my back and its injury, but I actually painted what I wanted to be after the injury. I have a painting. It's called A Healed Body is a Fit Body. And I do like to move and I do like to work out. And I was really, really committed to getting myself back into shape and back into the gym. And at the time I was doing a lot of CrossFit and I had hoped that I would go back to CrossFit. I don't, but I'm very, very active now. But this painting is very graphic, kind of stylized version of an overhead squat made of many different circles that create the silhouette of a woman with a barbell doing an overhead squat. I did this a couple times because it ended up being kind of an interesting painting. It's kind of the opposite of dwelling on the pain, right? It's dwelling on what the future could be, is creating a painting of your healing. And it can always be, it doesn't even have to be healing. It could always be painting what you want your future to be or could be, or even in a sort of fantastic way, what it might be. Like painting a family, if you want a family. So for example, it was really difficult for me to get pregnant. It took me a year of trying to get pregnant with my first daughter. And that was an incredible challenge. And in a way, a kind of healing too, because I didn't know what was wrong. I couldn't figure out why it was so hard for us. And, you know, we were really worried that we'd have to do the fertility route. I was just 30. I wasn't that old. But it just wasn't happening. And I did at that time have a couple of paintings. One was called Conception, that was of a fertilized egg actually attaching itself to the lining. So that was what I was painting, was the future. The other painting that I did was of a uterus, because, and that was more like along the lines of a intuitive painting as well, in that I know what a uterus looks like. I mean, you see these all the time when you're a woman, you go to these, you know, classes on sex education. And my mom was a midwife. And I mean, I've seen a lot of uteruses consciously and subconsciously, because just from having a mother who's a midwife, I just sat down and I painted this uterus. And I was asking at the time, what's wrong with me? Just show me through the painting, right? Like, show me through the painting if there's anything wrong with this uterus. I'm going to connect with myself through this art form. And through this, it's going to show me that there may be something wrong. And the truth was, in the process of creating this uterus, nothing came out wrong. It came out beautiful. It came out this beautiful, wonderful, glorious uterus that had nothing wrong with it. It was just taking its time, honestly. And I think there was a lot of stressful things happening in our life. We were remodeling a house. I was going through a tenure process at the college that I worked at. We were putting a lot of pressure on ourselves to have a baby. I don't think there was really anything wrong. It was just stress, really. And it was an interesting painting in that I decided to believe that the painting, nothing's wrong. Just keep moving. Just keep working at this. But it did help. It really helped to be painting into the future that way. To painting a kind of healing, and painting even about challenges, right? That's kind of a fuzzy one, because it's kind of sits in this sort of healing space, because I definitely needed to heal psychologically. There were definitely things that were happening psychologically to me that I needed to heal from in order to kind of be comfortable with the process of trying to get pregnant. At the same time, it was a challenge, right? Also, I should mention, I did have a miscarriage as well. So I had my daughter, and then between my daughter and my son, I had a really, really horrible miscarriage. I ended up in the hospital, in the ER, and I ended up having to have an emergency DNC. And it was probably the closest to death I've ever been. I got everything went completely black. I had no idea what people were saying to me. I had bled so much. It was an incredibly traumatic experience. I had been waiting for like 3 or 4 weeks for this miscarriage to come. I knew it was coming. I just decided not to have a medical intervention. And then I ended up in this dramatic form. It was heartbreaking. It had been so long. I had been waiting for so long to have this miscarriage. And then when I had it, it almost took my life away. I did paint after that. And that painting is not like any other painting that I painted. It was not a thoughtful painting. It was a pissed off and frustrated and sad painting about chaos, about how things are just not fair. So it is black, right? Like black is the color of choice in this, but it's also like all these other colors. And unlike some of the controlled form making I was into at the time, this one was just like blobs of color everywhere, just, you know, inside the black and this kind of bubbly, like intensity of feeling and fear, anger, sadness, maybe colorful for hope and broken hope and fear of being hopeful again.
Having a miscarriage is when you know that you're pregnant, imagination takes over, right? You're excited. You're going to have a baby. Your life is going to change. All sorts of stuff start shifting in your head, not to mention the hormones. You imagine a new life. And so even if you know that miscarriage is a possibility, which most women do know, we still go there. It still becomes a loss because there is this hidden seed and promise and hope in just getting pregnant. And you lose that. It's taken away for no apparent reason when you have a miscarriage. And I think that's what that painting was about and why it was so different than everything else was because I felt like everything had been taken away. Everything that I had imagined had been taken away. And it can make interesting art. And it's not just art for a means. It's art for process, for what it can give back to you, how it can heal. Some of these sources of inspiration can be very compelling to other people because they're touching and they're pushing into an inner experience that is much more difficult to portray and even to talk about for a lot of people. And I think art can become the medium for expressing them. Kind of pushing into this idea of healing and pushing into challenges. Another example, more around challenges and learning. My son is dyslexic. It was very much a shock to realize that he was dyslexic. And learning about him being dyslexic really pushed me. I had been an educator for a very long time. I had taught at a college for a long time. I have a master's degree in adult education. I am supposed to know about learning, and I knew nothing about dyslexia. When your son, when he's five, is having a difficult time learning how to read, and he has proven that he is an intelligent kid, I am on the warpath in my research trying to figure out what's going on. And I learned all sorts of wonderful and interesting things about the way we learn through that research that I had not learned in my master's degree program, which is really ridiculous, including that we don't really know a lot about how we learn, not as much as we think we do, especially when it comes to dyslexia. And dyslexic kids have unique traits and strengths, just like any other kid. But dyslexia seems to be an indicator of a different kind of processing that kids are doing or that adults are doing. You're dyslexic for the rest of your life, no matter what. Learning how to read is the challenge, but you just have a different way of processing the world when you're dyslexic. I was absolutely fascinated about some of the things I was learning. I was learning about how dyslexics, they generally have a visual way of understanding the world. They think more in pictures. This is a theory. They think more in pictures or maybe in not words. And what that means is they can think pretty quickly. Thinking in words is actually kind of slow. Thinking in pictures means you're thinking and processing really quickly, but you can't use words to express it because that's just not the way you're thinking. And that's sort of the weakness of being dyslexic is that words just don't work very well for you for expression. What it also means is that kids and humans, people with a dyslexia, tend to make huge intuitive leaps. Like it looks like they just went from point A to point Z in 2 seconds, which they might have done, but they did do some processing along the way. They just did it super quick because they were using a visual system of understanding the word, the world. And that was fascinating to me that this is actually a sign of a kid who just doesn't think the way that other people do. People who are more verbal tend to, like, when they're given a word like cat, they tend to have like a container for cat, a kind of template cat that they sort of hold for that word. And they don't get hung up on the word cat, right? It's just a cat. Dyslexic kid or adult will be more likely to be divergent in their thinking around the word cat. They probably will have 20 different ways of referencing that cat. Some of it memories, some of it, you know, paintings or art forms or, you know, all the different ways that you might have interacted with cat. And definitely the last one is going to be C-A-T. It's mostly going to be all these wonderful visual ways of understanding the word cat. Dyslexic people do not have a problem understanding the word cat and what it represents. They might have a hard time reading the word cat because it's just not the way that their mind works. And these things were absolutely interesting to me. I mean, I was not that kind of person. Reading and writing have always been a pretty highly regarded skill set in me. And so it was fascinating to learn that there were other ways of knowing. It inspired my work. It was really interesting. I ended up doing a triptych of three different paintings that were around these ideas of processing information and how words could kind of fold in on themselves and become all these other things, and how you could make intuitive leaps in judgment. And it was all very fluid and very abstract. But it was a way for me to process some of a challenge, which is, okay, I've got a kid with dyslexia, and how am I going to help him learn? And how am I going to keep him learning in a world that really doesn't understand him? And part of what I did was learn and process what it meant to be dyslexic, as well as paint about it. And I think in some ways, also, not just in some ways, but painting about it is also a way of advocating for it. It's a way of starting a conversation around a challenge, right? When you paint about your challenges, like dyslexia, like having a miscarriage, like you know, a herniated disc, you can connect with people around these things. None of these things are unique to me, right? Like, they're unique to the human experience. And we can all sort of relate to the themes that we've learned through the challenges that we've had in our lives. And they can really inform your art. Another interesting and unconventional source is through the images that emerge in your play in the way that you might be creating. And what this means is, you know, you're painting or you're writing or you're riffing on, you know, your music and without a clear intent. You are letting go of that analytical mind, the one that's always thinking and judging and challenging everything that you're doing. You're totally letting that go and just being. You're just playing with this medium that you love, and you're seeing what happens in doing that. It's difficult. It's difficult for some people to do this, to just let go and play. Eventually, things emerge. Sometimes a fairy emerges, a spirit guide, sometimes a bird, sometimes dolphins or figures can pop up when you're kind of playing with this. And I think if you're open to the idea that this is your subconscious way, your subconscious mind of telling you and helping you make meaning of your experiences, you can start to see how these patterns and how they're telling you about the universe and encouraging you in your thinking. You're basically having a conversation with yourself, but you're not letting your analytical mind get in the middle of it. You're really talking to this subconscious place, this place that doesn't use shapes and colors and words and music the same way that this analytical, mathematic, calculating part of your brain wants to work. It's very much an intuitive style of painting. Not everybody is completely comfortable going there all the time. And it really depends on the medium, if you can, and your comfort with the medium, if you can let yourself go into that work that way. It's been fascinating for me, though. I mean, I painted a spirit guide. This angel just popped up in my work from a watercolor I was doing once. And a fairy that I was just really annoyed at popped up. These birds, one of my paintings called Three Birds. I didn't know where that one was going at all. And suddenly here comes this bird. They pop up and they're kind of magical. And I think the paintings themselves end up with this kind of magical feeling because they're coming from that subconscious place, from that non-analytical space. And that's a source of inspiration. That's just letting go and trusting that something's going to come out of it. There's definitely a commitment that you've got to make in order to make that work. And kind of along with that, and important concepts you might be thinking about or journaling about. What I have found, again, is that if I'm journaling or thinking about different concepts like dyslexia, or I have a painting about surrender, about forgiveness, that always makes its way into my painting. My painting on forgiveness, I actually wrote a letter to myself underneath all of that. It's an acrylic painting about how I was going to forgive. And because I was really trapped in an angry cycle at somebody, and I was very frustrated with the circumstances of a relationship I was in, I knew it was going to be the end of it. And I didn't want to be angry about it. It was not my decision. I knew I just needed to forgive and move on. And forgiving is a lot about surrender. And eventually, the more that I painted and the more I played with colors and the more the iconography exposed itself, the more I could see that what I was thinking about, what I was journaling about, what I was writing underneath the surface of this painting was emerging in the images that I saw. It's similar to intuitive painting. It's a really a letting go and allowing yourself to kind of talk back to you through the painting. I have a lot of paintings like this. I have one about manifesting the law of attraction. I believe it's just this plugging into the universe and trusting it. And so I have a painting called Manifest, which literally has planets in it and flowers for blooming and changing and butterflies, because they're, you know, about transformation and people in prayer, motherhood, creation, all these sort of interesting icons kind of popped up that kind of helped me make more meaning about what manifestation might mean. One of my big paintings, Community, that came out of a sketch that was very much intuitively drawn when I was thinking about people. I used to live in Costa Rica, and the community that we had in Costa Rica, and when we moved back to Seattle, the community that we have in Seattle, and how community is not necessarily geographic anymore. It can be in two different countries, Costa Rica and Seattle. It can be across time too. Of course, your community always changes. People die. People are born. And I ended up drawing a sketch that, and for me, really express this idea of how connected our communities can be. And I painted that one from a sketch, a painting called Falling into Grace. And that was based on a book. So I was talking about what you might be thinking or journaling about. Of course, a book, spiritual book about falling into grace by Adi Ashanti and his advice and experiences around grace and finding and walking a spiritual path. That idea of falling into grace, that, like, again, back to surrender, right? And letting go and finding grace with that surrender was really interesting to me. And my painting, Falling into Grace, kind of looks like a figure, and they're not falling down, right? They're falling sideways, because if you were to fall into grace, to me, it does not seem like it is gravity related. It can't be a painting of somebody falling down. And it can't be a painting of somebody. It's a figure, but it's a very ethereal figure. It's an energy portrait, really. And they're falling sideways. All of these things that you're thinking about, these things you're reading about or journaling about, It doesn't have to be a thing, right? It doesn't have to be a goldfish or a fairy. It can be a concept or idea that you take as an intent into your work and you let the process of creating unfold it for you. You don't have to know going in exactly what it's going to be, but you know that you've been doing this work. You've been doing the work on forgiving. You've been doing the work and thinking about community. You've been thinking about Falling into Grace or a book that you've been doing. And just like, what would that mean if I interpreted it with my skill set, with my painting, with what I'm good at? And how can I incorporate it? For me, when I paint like that, I really am trying to internalize it, learn it in a different way. To me, it's part of not just my creative expression, but it's also a way for me to learn these concepts and ideas that are really difficult. Come on, to surrender and to forgive. Forgiving has got to be one of the hardest things in the world to do. I mean, like it's easy to forgive somebody who sort of like pushed you in a line. But like when you're talking about betrayal, when you're talking about friends who you're going to lose because you feel like they've betrayed you, that is difficult. Learning to forgive. And it's the best thing you can do. It's the healthiest thing that you can do for yourself, right? To move on, to move into a more productive and creative life is to forgive. Kind of going along with some of these more like esoteric ways to find inspiration. Of course, you've got feelings too, right? I have a painting called Contrast and Frequency, which to me, every time I look at it, is the feeling that I feel like me and many friends of mine had when the election happened. It was incredibly disheartening to have a president be elected who was so clearly a misogynist and what that meant for women. The painting itself was called Contrast and Frequency because it was so disruptive, and to just have this sort of zap through your system that maybe the world wasn't as calm and tranquil as I thought it was, especially when it came to being a woman. And that was just a feeling. That was just basically riffing on what does this feel like? What does this shock to the system feel like? It was not, it's not Trump. It's not a painting of anything political at all. It's very abstract, but it's very, very feeling based as well. I also have a painting, one I guess that I've done more recently called Release, which is, you know, all about letting go. And it kind of goes back to surrender. Those are kind of overlapping, right? Ideas, but this idea of just releasing what's not working, of the things that just don't help you anymore, so that you can create a new world. And it may not be a clear new world, but especially when you're first releasing. And I think that's really where that painting kind of sits. And that feeling, that lightness that can come with that, and the sense of possibility as well. Those are all really great feeling-based ways of thinking about art. But let me turn to a couple of other less esoteric, still imaginative ways about finding inspiration. Back to some of the themes I was talking about before, though. Another thing is to think about what something inside, what it looks like inside of something, or what the world might be like inside of something. Especially early on, I had some paintings. It was just this total imaginative play of what the world inside of a plant might be like, all the microorganisms moving around and functioning within that plant were really interesting to me, that idea. Of course, I also had, you know, MRIs in the, which are also inside the body, very organic, right? Another painting I did was of dendrites, which are special neurons that represent learning in our brain. And as an educator, I thought when I ran into this idea of what a dendrite was, I thought they were really interesting because they really spider out from the center of things and they connect. The way that we learn is we connect ways of knowing, different ways of being, different stories, different ideas. We connect those to each other. And dendrites are what connect and create that sense of learning. If you don't have anything to connect to, you don't really learn, right? These little neurons are inside your body, just like those MRIs and stuff too. So you could just imagine what it might be like inside of something that you can't see inside. What's inside of a dog's brain, for example? You know, there are a lot of different ways you could interpret that one. Or what's inside of a tree or inside of a planet in a different universe. You can do whatever you want when you sit in those places inside something. And finally, my last source of maybe non-traditional inspiration has been drawings that my kids have done or their ideas. Kids are incredibly inspiring. They are so playful and they have so many ideas. I love the way that they create because they are so in the moment. They are so about process. They are so in love with color and not interested so much in what the product's going to be, that they just have this really loose and wonderful quality when it comes to making art. And it can be very inspiring to take a look at some of their work. I have a painting of drawing that my son did of a dragon because I loved this dragon. It had this crazy round body and these wings, and it breathed everything, because that's what he said. It breathed everything. It breathed fire and water and stars, and it did everything. It, you know, lived on rainbows, and it was as much what the drawing was as the story that he was telling me of this beautiful, wonderful dragon that so inspired me to paint this kind of fantastical creature. It was fun. My daughter also drew a turtle based on a trip we had to Mexico where we saw a baby turtle. She called it Life Begins at Sea. So that's the name of the painting. It's of a turtle. My son also liked dragons. He went through a phase. So I would say he must have been 3 or 4, and he would talk about the dragons that lived in the tree in our front of our house. He talked about these dragons more than once. And I thought it was fantastic that he thought these dragons live in the tree. And I remember asking him, are they good dragons or are they bad dragons? And of course, they were good dragons. They were protecting us. And so I sat down and I drew a dragon that was protecting us. Those can be wonderful. I mean, and kind of along with that are fairy tales. Like, I used to love fairy tales. Those kind of stories that you tell your kids are great stories to use as blocks for stories of your own or paintings of your own or music or anything like that. So there you go. I think I gave you 8 sources of inspiration that you can use to inspire your creativity that may not have that much to do with the physical world. And I'll recap. You can go from memory. Childhood memories or memories of photographs so that you can capture the moods, the connection that you felt in those moments. You can use your injury or your pain beyond broken hearts, right? But we're talking about things like the carpal tunnel painting that I had or the broken back, the herniated discs. In line with injuries and pain is the healing. And that includes drawing a vision or a painting or expressing a vision of the future and what you want it to look like after whatever traumatic experience has happened. This includes also the challenges, right? That you can also paint about your challenges. It doesn't necessarily have to be an injury per se. Dyslexia was a big challenge for me when I first learned that my son was dyslexic. The miscarriage was a big challenge. And in this way, you can use your creativity as a way to process and to learn and to integrate your experiences in different ways, but not using that analytical brain, but using a subconscious and more authentic way of learning and knowing about your challenges and healing and pain. Going along with that, you can just use play. You can just play with your medium and see what comes out of it. And know that eventually there might be some images and icons or just some feelings that start to emerge the more that you play. I've had things like birds and dolphins emerge. Whatever you're thinking about or journaling about or reading about is fair game too. You can bring that intent into a painting. And again, for me, a lot of the times this works without having a clear concept or idea and just letting the process of art making and the intent of processing what I'm thinking about or journaling about or reading about sort of guide me. Feelings, surrendering, letting go, that shock to the system, wishing and desiring, all these different kinds of emotions, happiness, getting into the more complex emotions can be more interesting too. Joy, hope, freedom. These are all interesting feelings to explore in your art and allow your art to just be representative of those feelings. And then you can paint inside something, inside a tree, inside a body, inside somebody's head. These are really imaginative spaces. We don't exactly know what's going on in them. And you have a lot of freedom in there to kind of figure out and kind of think about what might be happening. And finally, your kids can be a great source of inspiration. Or if you don't have kids, the kids in your life, whoever they might be, your nieces and nephews, your grandkids, even the kids, you know, in the playground, just go hang out and see what they're talking about. And you'll be surprised to see what kind of imaginative, wonderful things come out of their mouth and what they might be drawing or singing and how that can inspire your work as well. So there you go. There are 8 sources of inspiration that you can find within yourself or around you. And I would love to see what you come up with here, whether painting, story, song, dance. How can you find those sources of the human experience and bring them into your creativity? How can you push past the real, right? The photograph, the already known, into these more experimental phases and places and see what you can actually create that expresses something a little bit more. So thank you for listening. I'm grateful for the attention you bring and the stories you share, the thoughts that we spark today, and what I'm thinking after even doing this podcast. I'm super excited now to start painting. And I hope you are excited about creating too. Thank you for spending this time with me and for spreading the word about Creative and Curious. You can find me here every Thursday with new thoughts and insights on creativity, curiosity, and life. Tell me what you think. Please email me your comments and questions at marika@marikarenke.com. And if you feel inclined, leave a review. They really do mean the world to me, and they'll help this podcast reach people just like you. And the best thing that you can do, keep creating. Thanks again.